What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Today, Anheuser-Busch finally speaks out about the Dylan Mulvaney partnership. AOC gets slammed by Mayor Eric Adams, and Dr. Peter McCullough joins me to discuss what might be the cause of the rise of transgenderism. We've got all of that coming up, and it all starts right now. Welcome to the News and Why It Matters. I am Sarah Gonzalez, and Anheuser-Busch has finally broken their silence on the infamous Bud Light Dylan Mulvaney marketing collab that sent sales crashing 26% seemingly overnight and lost them more than $6 billion in market capitalization in just 6 days. Global CEO Michael Doukaris told investors in a letter, Anheuser-Busch did not intend to create controversy or make a political statement. In reality, the Bud Light can posted by a social media influencer that sparked all the conversation was provided by an outside agency without Anheuser-Busch management awareness or approval. Since that time, the lack of oversight and control over marketing decisions has been addressed and a new VP of Bud Light marketing has been announced. We need to clarify the facts that this was one camp, one influencer, one post, and not a campaign. We will continue to learn, meet the moment in time, all be stronger, and we work tirelessly to do what we do best, bring people together over a beer and create a future of more cheers. They also told investors they would be tripling their ad campaign over the summer in an attempt to persuade former Bud Light drinkers to come back to their crappy beer. But will it be enough? Since the April 1st debacle, they've already tried two different I'm sorry ads that were so over-the-top pandering, they somehow made people hate them even more. Acknowledging the mishap is a start, but is it too little too late? Well, here to discuss this and more, we have Chad Prather, host of The Chad Prather Show, and Yaku Buyans, Blaze TV contributor and host of The Bottom Line. You know, it's fascinating because Chad sent me a picture just last night of someone at a bar drinking Bud Light. And it was the first one he had seen in since this happened, right?
I'm such a creeper. I really
am. You didn't take a picture of the person.
Well, you know. I was sitting there at the corner of the bar at a hotel having dinner because I'm a lonely human. And I'm sitting there having dinner.
This couple cries for help.
This couple sits down next to me. I live a pathetic life. I don't know if you know this or not, but I'm sitting there and this guy sits down and his girlfriend's next to me, and then it's him, and he orders a Bud Light. And that's the first Bud Light I've seen loose in the wild in a month, I guess, since this whole debacle started.
Which, I mean, last time we went to a bar a couple weeks ago, and we're asking bartenders, we're asking people.
Everywhere I go.
Everywhere.
Look, I'm in the business of helping people drink, right? I go out on Fridays and Saturday nights. I do live shows, music and comedy. Texas, Kansas, and Florida coming up. Check me out. And I, you know, every place I go, they serve alcohol. No one's drinking Bud Light. Everywhere I go, I ask, are you drinking Bud Light? I was just, while you were doing opening a statement there, I went to Bud Light's Twitter account. Mm-hmm. They've tweeted once in the last month. One time,
wow.
April 14th, and all they said was TGIF with a picture of a Bud Light can. I mean, this is a robust social media company that, you know, they've got a big following. I don't know how many probably followers they've lost.
Right.
But one tweet in a month for a company like Bud Light,
I also would be curious to know if they got ratioed on the tweet, because I know there was a lot of people, myself included, who piled on to that tweet. I want to show also, while we're talking about, you know, not seeing any Bud Lights when we're going around, someone took a video of Fenway Park. There's just no one had any Bud Lights. Everyone was drinking other things. And so it was just this crazy phenomenon that happened that, I don't know, everyone just finally said, no, we're not doing this. But I guess the question is, if what they're saying is true, and it was this chick, Alyssa Heinerscheid, it was this chick who gave full full decision-making powers to some outside agency and just said, you guys just, you know better than me. I don't know why she was employed there since she didn't want to do a job. But should we be still punishing Bud Light, Anheuser-Busch, if that's true?
So here's my opinion on this, okay? She's the VP of marketing. Mm-hmm. It's her job.
Mm-hmm.
So if she abdicates authority or delegates authority, it's her decision. It's her job description. She's supposed to steward the brand.
Mm-hmm.
She did not steward the brand. I would go the other way and saying she initiated. It's her initiative. It's her position. When I look at her statements, there's no remorse. She's not defending the brand. She's actually defending that lifestyle, mm-hmm. right? So I think Anheuser is still responsible. They're trying to pivot. I don't think the CEO knew.
Right.
I don't, of course, the board didn't know. She made a decision, but you represent the brand. We're sitting here, we're representing the Blaze.
Mm-hmm.
When I go out, I mean, we understand you represent a tribe, a team.
Right.
And so whether she abdicated it, it's just not quite how it works though, Sarah. I've been in many, many marketing campaigns. Someone in the company has to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
And she is a senior, that's a senior member now of marketing. And so she had to say yes. And if she said, you know, I don't, you know,
right.
that's on her.
Right.
So, okay, here we go. And then ultimately, the gavel drops with the CEO. He's the last buck. That's where it stops. It stops with him. So yeah, I think they felt pain. What's interesting to me though, is how our society is choosing to fight against insanity. They're not showing up when you call them. Can 10,000 parents please show up because they're having kids at a drag show, but they won't drink a beer, really saying we're not for this.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that weird though? Oh, you know what? We'll cancel. So society actually does agree with us. They are not into this kid trans crazy, insane, you know, psychosis movement. They just won't show up.
Right. Right.
Oh, rally. And for the record, Anheuser-Busch is lying. It was not one. It was not one post.
That's
not
right.
One picture. It was multiple videos, and it wasn't. They just sent a can with his picture on there.
I mean, they had to create that can.
Sarah, if Bud Light called you and
it's
said, "Hey, listen, we want to send you this thing," you would take a check, wouldn't you? Like if they Anheuser-Busch won. Like I don't think my point is Dylan Mulvaney didn't do this for free.
Right.
No.
Right.
No.
Yes. Correct. Right. Which is why he had to put on his Instagram post, he had to put that it was a paid partnership with Bud Light.
And he did multiple little videos.
There's managers involved. Mulvaney has a manager. There's agents.
Yes,
there's so many people.
And also on Anheuser-Busch part, on Anheuser-Busch's part, there were so many levels of approval that had to go through before that thing went out. And before they don't send me a can with my face on it. You know, they don't just put people's faces on cans.
That takes work to create the graphic.
And you know, I've wrestled with this question of what touched the nerve. I mean, beyond the exploitation of women and the insanity of gender dysphoria because again, people dealing with gender dysphoria are not the trans activists. The trans activists are the problems. The people with the gender dysphoria, those people aren't the activists. They're wanting to get comfortable in a body. They're dealing with a mental issue and they know it. The doubling down, but a beer, what we think of as an all-American beer.
Right.
It's not, but we think of it that way. You know, how many boys, you know, when they shared a beer with their dad for the first time, and it touches that sense of just hanging out with your buddy, you know what I'm saying?
Did you have Bud Light with your dad?
No, but people had a beer.
Oh, well,
point is, there's a passing of the mantle into manhood. There's hanging with your buddies. There's the reminder of all these different points in life where, you know what, let's go have a beer and
it
celebrate.
It says something about our culture. This is what I'm trying to say, too, is that through the beer, they're making a statement saying, We're against this.
Mm.
I just wish they'd actually show up, you know?
Well, they're not going to apologize.
I didn't think about it that way, but now that Yaku said that, now I'm pissed.
Right?
Now I am pissed. Yeah.
I thought about that immediately, because I don't drink.
It's
beer has nothing to me. Cancel all of it for me. Sorry, buddy. But
I don't drink beer.
I know you're a tequila guy.
Yeah, I don't really drink beer.
Cancel all of it, but it's just weird to me how Americans are expressing their real feelings.
Well, I think it's very simple when you think about the average American. It just comes down to convenience, right? Like Americans are creatures of convenience. Thank you. And if it's convenient for them, they'll do it. If it's just a different beer that they're grabbing at the grocery store, they'll do it. If I'm asking them, like, hey, if you hate this thing so much, will you also show up with me on the weekends to go fight this?
Don't get carried away,
Sarah. Whoa.
Don't get carried away.
I'm not going to get off my couch to do it.
I don't want to do that. I mean, there's always other beers to drink.
Right.
Which I posted on my Twitter last night. There's the picture of Dylan Mulvaney holding the Crest white strips. And I said, listen, corporate America, if you see this guy holding your product, slap it out of his hand.
Yes.
He's bad for business.
Billions bad.
I will be very fascinated to see if Americans finally forgive them. I'm with you. I don't buy the excuse that, like, oh, it was just this outside agency. Here's the thing.
It's a lie.
I think it is too, but even if it was, the two ads that they created after the fact were so bad, and it felt like, not even just a slap in the face, but it felt like they thought that you were so stupid that you'd be like, oh, horse and also flag. Oh, I love Bud Light again. Like, they just think you're a mindless robot who's so stupid that you'd be like, I just forgot everything that happened 5 seconds ago. I'm all in. And that, to me, was like the more insulting part, that they continued to do that rather than give acknowledgement.
We've told corporate America forever that they can control us, so why not? Just come out with another campaign to tell us what to think.
Right.
Sarah, it came from the same marketing department. So I'm telling you,
that VP of marketing did get fired.
She did, but again, that whole department, I'm telling you, they may have to look into their whole marketing department, may have been infiltrated like Twitter was infiltrated when Elon showed up. It's like, wait a minute, we're going to fire 80% of these folks.
Yeah.
So Anheuser, you may have a deeper problem.
Which you would think that they are scrambling to root out right now, if they're smart. All right, let's go ahead and take a quick break. We'll be back with more. First, I want to thank our sponsor, Patriot Mobile. So Patriot Mobile is, you know, we're talking about this Bud Light thing with, you know, people wanting to choose another beer because Bud Light sucks and they don't represent your values and what you're about. That's what they're doing over at Patriot Mobile. They're giving you an alternative from Big Mobile. You've got those three big mobile companies who are taking a portion of your money and they're donating it to left-leaning causes, like, you know, causes that want to take your guns away, causes that are pro-abortion. Don't do that. Go to Patriot Mobile. They're America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. They have nationwide service on all three major networks, so you're going to get the best possible service in your area without all of the woke propaganda pushed by leftists working hard to destroy the entire country. You got to go to patriotmobile.com/news. You can get free activation with the offer code news. By the way, ask about their coverage guarantee while you're there. It is patriotmobile.com/news. So I want to talk about what's going on in New York, because we might have the next George Floyd event on our hands. This is Jordan Neely. So protesters are taking the streets of New York City today to protest the death of Jordan Neely. This was a quite mentally unstable homeless man. Apparently, he was acting erratically and aggressively in a subway train, screaming at all of the passengers, and a Marine veteran aboard attempted to subdue him while waiting for the police to arrive. The unnamed passenger placed him in a chokehold while other passengers held his legs. And look, there's already chants downtown on Black Lives Matter, the homeless matter. Spokesman for NYPD told Newsweek that Neely has a record that includes 42 prior arrests between 2013 and 2021, including an active warrant for an assault at the time of his death related to a 2021 incident. I want to go to AOC's reaction. Of course, this is New York, so AOC has to inject herself into the conversation by saying Jordan Neely was murdered. But because Jordan was houseless and crying for food in a time when the city is raising rents and stripping services to militarize itself, while many in power demonize the poor, the murderer gets protected with passive headlines and no charges. It's disgusting. Well, New York City Mayor Eric Adams was asked about AOC's remark, and I want to play for you what he had to say. He was not a fan of it. I'll tell you that much. Watch.
So one of the reasons that this story is really hitting a nerve is because this man appeared to be having mental health issues. This is something that you've talked a lot about. But I want to read to you, this is a response from the comptroller, Brad Lander. He tweeted this: New York City is not Gotham. We must not become a city where mentally ill human can be choked to death by a vigilante without consequence. There's also this from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the Democratic congresswoman. She said, Jordan Neely was murdered. What is your response to what they're saying here?
Well, both the Congresswoman and the comptroller, the comptroller is a citywide leader. And I don't think that's very responsible at the time where we're still investigating the situation. Let's let the DA conduct his investigation with the law enforcement officials. To really interfere with that is not the right thing to do. And I'm going to be responsible and allow them to do their job and allow them to determine exactly what happened here.
So you have a black man who is saying, let's calm down, let's wait for the facts to come out, let's be responsible. And AOC is hollering about Jordan Neely was murdered.
Yeah, she's trying to get ahead of it, right? She's trying to be the one of the persons on the forefront that's screaming out for justice.
Yeah, who's responsible for all the looting and all of the cars being burned and all of the next steps that we're going
to
see?
You know, she's on their side.
Right.
You know, to listen to Eric Adams talk over the last months, New York's great. It's wonderful. It's the best it's ever been, right? I mean, he's talked about how the only thing wrong with it is all these illegals are coming in here now. We don't know what to do with them. But this is a sad situation in that, you know, obviously there's a loss of life. But you act crazy on the subway. You ask any New Yorker that takes the subway on a regular basis, you're afraid to make eye contact with certain people on there because you don't know what's about to pop off, right? Now, again, what are you going to ban? There was no gun involved, right? So there's no let's have gun control here. This guy, you know, he acts in self-defense, or he acts in some kind of a way to
in defense of other passengers.
You don't know everything that happened. I mean, there's always somebody there with a cell phone camera to shoot it. But I hope, you know, this guy had a rap sheet. I think like 44 different charges against him, but so did George Floyd, and we saw what happened there. The only advantage this former Marine, which there's no such thing as a former Marine, the only thing this Marine has in his favor is he's not wearing a cop uniform.
Yeah, that's true. It's also fascinating, Yaku, to see AOC demonize the city's policies, because these seem to be all of the same policies that she herself advocates for. So she's talking about, he's food insecure, or whatever the hell she wants to say. It's like, that's because of all of the policies you love.
100%. You created a poverty class that didn't exist. You created lawlessness. They're not militarizing New York. Okay. I wasn't on this show Tuesday because I was in Times Square Tuesday. And Tuesday night, I'm standing in Times Square, went there to go be on Newsmax, and they are literally getting high on the street. Everywhere, Chad. I've never seen anything like that in my life. Even the people that were with me commented on every corner, blatant impact, sitting 5 feet from the cops. They're getting high. Like, seriously. And this is a city that's lawless. Remember, this mayor told us New York has a brand. This is the guy that said New York has a brand, you know, and you can't come against the brand. Well, the brand is bad because AOC destroyed New York. People like her. It's interesting now that he's taking a stance. I mean, I like where he's standing on this. Can the DA just look into this? What do you want him to do? The guy stabs someone on the train, and then it's okay. Then, you know what? Someone should have done something. Now you have a Marine that steps in with the training that he's got. He's not punching him. He's not, you know, belittling him. He's subduing him with a rear naked chokehold, which is a pretty good tactic to subdue someone with, right? And so it goes. So what do we do as Americans? You're in a box moving 40 miles an hour with a crazy person who they let out in the first place 40-something times, and his last one was an assault. So he has assaulted somebody. George Floyd stabbed a woman in the stomach, right? So what do? You defend people. That's what you do. So the Marine did what he was supposed to do. No, I don't want the guy to lose his life, right? But you got to take action. Put your phone down and settle the situation. And that's what they did. And he wasn't alone. Others agreed that you could see they helped the Marine.
Right.
This guy was out of control.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what do you want Americans to do?
All right, let's go ahead and take another quick break. We'll be back with more, but we want to thank our sponsor, Relief Factor. So if you are one of millions of Americans, you just live in constant pain and you're walking around just constantly achy and you just think that that's just life now for me. Life's just going to suck. It does not have to be that way. Please, please try Relief Factor. I know from personal experience how much it can affect your life when you have pain. I had a car accident a long time ago that resulted in a bunch of herniated and protruding discs in my back and my neck, and it really sucks. But Relief Factor is a really great way to reduce that pain, which is mostly caused by inflammation in your body. And when you take it as directed, it could absolutely change your life. It has helped me with my pain. It has helped Glenn Beck with his pain. There are so many of us who can testify to the results of Relief Factor. So you got to go there. Go get the 3-week quick start. It is $19.95, and 70% of the people who do that go on to keep ordering more because it's working for them. Go to relieffactor.com. That is relieffactor.com. I want to welcome to the program physician, scientist, cardiologist, I would say world-renowned cardiologist, Dr. Peter McCullough. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's an honor to have you. It's an honor to call you a friend. And listen, Dr. McCullough, I know that you're aware of the work that I do on protecting children from the radical trans ideology. And I've noticed that you have been doing some work into looking into why is transgenderism on the rise, right? Like why, I mean, we're doing all of this to children. It seems to be that it has just taken off just like that. All of a sudden, everybody is transgender. And I wanted to ask you what you have uncovered, because you've been doing some deep digging into this. And you know, this isn't an opinion. This is science, which the left claims that they love very, very much. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to come on and talk about the work that you've been doing on this.
Well, thanks for having me on the program. We're neighbors here in Dallas. I'm in practice, and any doctor in medicine right now will be managing patients in this expanding category of LGBTQI, I think is the most recent number. But you know, I have now some transgender patients in my practice. Many state licensing boards have mandated continuing medical education for doctors to learn about transgender medicine. And boy, Americans can't help but notice the explosion of news stories about transgenderism. And sometimes you turn on the news, it's just every hour there's some news story, some aspect of it. And so I trained in epidemiology, and it's complemented my clinical practice in internal medicine and cardiology, but epidemiology is the study of the distribution and determinants of disease. And boy, was that a good move. And I went to University of Michigan School of Public Health. And what I've uncovered is that there are two epidemics that are occurring in young people right now, in a sense, and they are really on the move. One is autism. Mm-hmm. Now, autism in the 1970s was 1 in 10,000 children. The CDC says today it's 1 in 36. Mm-hmm. So there's so many people listening to the show who have autistic children or people in their family. I saw one in my practice yesterday, a 50-year-old man who had autism. Mm-hmm. And the other observation, what's on the rise, is this sociological, but I would also say medical and clinical rise in transgenderism. Mm-hmm. The two are coincident. And the Dutch have been leading the way on this. And a paper published in 2015, summarizing the years before that by Vandermeesen and colleagues, demonstrate at that time, 20% of young people who were going to transgender clinics, making that decision to move forward with hormonal and surgical therapy, in fact, had clinical autism. Now, we recognize now that there is a spectrum, what's called autism spectrum disorder. So this leads us to a concern that younger individuals with autism who may have self-doubt, they may not see themselves fitting in from a social perspective, school, church, etc., even family, this feeling of self-efficacy, that is, am I confident in myself? and particularly those who may be somewhat delayed in pubertal changes. So they talk to a parent or talk to a counselor, and there's a suggestion that maybe they feel the way they do because they should join a different gender.
Right.
The opposite gender.
Right, right. So with the autistic children, who obviously are vulnerable children, right, there are some autism advocacy networks who are actually pushing for autistic children to become trans. Do I have that correct?
It's true. They're taking a stance. One is the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network, and they're out there on the internet opining on legislation. So many states have legislation moving forward, in a sense, safeguarding legislation for children. And they are commenting on that and saying that, listen, they don't want this legislation to move forward. They believe it's discriminatory against children with autism, discriminatory against their decision, I guess their independent decision, to change to the opposite gender. But the fact that a self-advocacy network, largely anticipate of adults, mm-hmm. are making this move. And then another paper to cite is by Warrior and colleagues. This is astounding. 641,860 individuals, multiple different data sets of surveys. They were surveyed. The conclusion was autism runs very, very strongly, many-fold increased risk of transgender autism. So when we see transgender individuals out there, the image that we should actually be forming in our mind is it's largely driven by autism. What happens to all these autistic kids when they grow up? Mm-hmm. There is a clear, unequivocal association. There is an epidemiological link. So someone may ask, well, why is transgenderism on the rise? It's probably driven by autism.
By the autism. Wow. What about your study of the analysis of mortality among transgender individuals?
Well, there's some disturbing findings now. And the news has been filled recently, by the way, of mass shootings, other events, violent events. A paper from the UK by Jackson and colleagues published in JAMA demonstrated clearly that, and this is, I think the median age in the study was 36 years old, among transgender individuals, mortality is skyrocketing. Homicide, suicide, death from other causes. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you as a doctor, if I prescribed a medicine and or did a procedure in patients as my practice offering, and it increased mortality, I would shut it down. Mm-hmm. I would shut it down. I think the Jackson paper is one that really should be read and reviewed by these transgender medicine programs that are now sprouting up all over the country. Doctors participating in this, they need to understand when they remove a pair of normal breasts, mm-hmm. when they put breast implants in a man, or start to administer hormones. Pre-puberty, there's hormones that actually are given that are influencing the pituitary to stop the pituitary from normally signaling the whole body development. Or post-puberty, there's straight up estrogens and androgens that are given. When they do this, they are increasing the mortality of the patient in front of them. The data are very clear. Another citation was by Mendez and colleagues. This was published in a few years ago. This is stunning. Over 30 years, 16 studies, 2921 homicides in the peer-reviewed medical literature of gender-diverse individuals, and including transgender. Transgender, by the way, had the highest risk of actually being murdered. Mm. What was learned in that study is that about 40% of the time, the assailant and the victim, they know each other. And it's usually man on man, mm-hmm. man on man. So this is a word out there for parents who are considering their children doing this, the children considering doing this, and then the adults who have already done it. Watch out. Mortality and risk of harm is high.
So I want to take a quick break, and then when we come back, I want to talk about we're talking about autism being linked to transgenderism. I want to focus on the autism aspect as well when we come back. But I want to remind you guys really quickly before we go to break, we do have our new exclusive film. It's called Reopening. It is only on blazetv.com, so you got to go there. It's a mockumentary. It's very, very funny. Make sure that you check it out. You can go to blazetv.com/reopening to get $20 off. That is blazetv.com/reopening. You're going to want to watch this movie, so go there and enjoy the laughs. I want to go back to something that you said before, because we're talking about all of these, the hormone therapy, we're talking about surgeries, we're talking about all of these things, these medical, procedures that cost a lot of money. And it's fascinating to me because the average American, I don't feel like, has all of this money lying around to pay for all of these surgeries and these therapies. So who's paying for all of this?
Turns out that towards the end of the Obama administration, it was written into Obamacare that gender-affirming procedures, hormonal therapy and surgery, would be covered by insurance. And a recent paper published has revealed that only 5% of these individuals pay for this themselves. It's all being paid for by government sources of funding or commercial insurance. And, gender-affirming, so a man who wants to have breast implants, which, by the way, is the most popular surgery that's done, very rarely is orchiectomy done. Mm-hmm. Very rarely. Less than 5% of men really have their testicles removed. Mm-hmm. So the majority of men who appear like a woman, largely because they have had breast implants and they change their facial and hair appearance, they're fully sexualized men. This is very important. So they have normally functioning male sexual organs, they have sex like a man, and the majority, honestly, choose other similar men. So this is largely the adult transgenderism, I think, is largely driven by homosexuality, and it's, in a sense, a gay kink to have one person look like a man and another one look like a woman, or two, they're, in a sense, they're androgynous. They look part man, part woman.
So I want to go back to the autism thing for a second. And this is, I don't know, maybe this part won't be available on YouTube. I have no idea. But I do think it's important because when you're talking about these two things, transgenderism and autism, both rising at alarming rates, the autism thing, you're not allowed to talk about, right? You're not allowed to ask questions. You're not allowed to ask, what is the cause? I feel like that's very important to find out, right? Because you're saying it went from 1 in 10,000 to 1 in 36. That's quite the increase. So how are we to know? It feels like the taboo question you're not allowed to ask, what causes autism? Because it feels like it's kind of a big deal, guys.
It's the biggest public health concern that young families have today. It is number one. Mm-hmm. And autism, remember, it's a spectrum all the way to being completely disabling. Mm-hmm. I have patients in my practice who have children who require 24/7 institutional level care, and they will never, ever, participate in society fully. And then others who are just a little off, but they're out in society. Autism is neuropsychiatric. This is very important. It's not just a psychological problem because it develops very early on, typically before the age of 6, mm-hmm. most of the time age under 2. So something's mm-hmm. happening very early on in development. There are neurologic features to it, including headache, including hyperacusis. There's some other things. Autistic individuals have certain tendencies, dietary, otherwise. And then there's clearly the psychiatric part of it that people recognize as not fitting in, eye contact,
right.
Outbursts, screaming, things of this nature, violence. Mm-hmm. Violence is part of it. So it's neuropsychiatric. Whatever it happens early. And it is exploding. Well, I can tell you, since 1970, genetics don't change that much, so we can rule that one out. Number two, modern obstetrical care has improved. Mm. So it can't be something at the time of delivery because we have less cerebral palsy, less fetal distress. So that's better. we're down to basically something in the water supply, something in the food supply. I don't think the way mothers initially are handling than fathers is any different. Or there's about over 80 papers now in the peer-reviewed literature that it's related to actually the massive acceleration in vaccines, regular vaccines. Mm-hmm. So when I was a child, there were three shots, about five different antigens. Now a child today faces 72 shots, 16 antigens. If we add COVID-19, it's 17 antigens. There are clear vignettes where a child comes in and takes like five shots all at once before the age of two, has a febrile seizure, and the parents say the child was never the same again. And what I've come to learn in this is to trust the mothers. The mothers know their child. Mm-hmm. And they will tell you they took the child in there, had all these normal developmental milestones, went in for the vaccination event, and the child was forever changed. Mm-hmm. And the term has been used, vaccine injury. But there's a great concern here. Now, the epidemiology needs to be filled in. We need high-quality data. But in the absence of anything else, I think the most biologically tenable hypothesis is that it's related to vaccines.
So what you're the smart one at the table, okay? So tell me if I'm understanding this correctly. So vaccines could potentially be causing transgenderism to a degree. Would that be?
I think driven through autism. Now,
right.
Let me say, it may not be the individual vaccines, but it may be the intensity of them, mm-hmm. spaced in time. Mm-hmm. So the other difference is, vaccine schedules. Now, full disclosure, I've taken every vaccine. I'm fully vaccinated. My children took all the vaccines. I took them all. I even took more. I went out to India, but I have not taken the COVID vaccine because that's a whole different discussion. But having said that, my parents didn't look at this critically, and I can tell you back in the 60s, I don't think it really was a discussion. And through the course of my children now, 20 years ago, I honestly don't think it came up as a discussion, but it is now. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, this has really come to fore in a paper by Paul Thomas, pediatrician, who studied about half of his practice fully vaccinated children, half that went natural. And parents make the decision. They want to go natural. This is common now.
That's me.
And they went natural. And I tell you, going natural, hands down, there was less allergic rhinitis, dermatitis, urticaria, tonsillectomies, tympanostomy tubes, asthma, and less neuropsychiatric illness, Asperger's, and autism, considerably less. So the observational comparative data also raised the issue of, could we actually be doing this to ourselves, mm-hmm. with hypervaccination? Remember, some of the vaccines now, they've lost their compelling case. Like, for example, diphtheria and pertussis.
Right.
I mean, it's treated with a Z-Pak.
Right.
I wouldn't have any concerns about not receiving those vaccines. Tetanus shot with good wound care. We always give antibiotics, what have you. They're certainly not compelling. There's a lot of unnecessary vaccination. For instance, a newborn child is given the hepatitis B vaccine, mm-hmm. and the only clinical indication to do that is if we have an active IV drug abusing mother. That's the only time we want to prevent vertical transmission. But to blanket every kid on this, I remember when I was a kid growing up, a new vaccine was introduced, which I think is compelling actually, is rubella, mm-hmm. or German measles. And as a kid growing up, around that time, before the vaccine, there were 20,000 cases of congenital rubella syndrome per year. And this was a disaster for mothers, the babies. It was horrible. And since vaccination, we're down to about two cases a year. I mean, it's really compelling. However, the boys don't get significant German measles. Mm. That is just a runny nose, what have you. So we really only needed to target women as they approach childbearing years. But since the very beginning, the idea was blanket everybody with rubella. Remember, it's part of the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine. Look at measles, for example. Now with modern care, it's basically a non-threatening skin rash. And when there are measles outbreaks, they're fully vaccinated people.
Right.
So it doesn't.
Right. It's not helping that much.
It doesn't work. Mumps, okay. Yeah. I had mumps. We get through it. Mumps can cause, in boys, actually, mumps or orchitis. But again, when there's been mumps outbreaks, fully vaccinated kids get it. You know, recently, you know, since 1996, another vaccine that's come up is Gardasil, mm-hmm. which is the HPV vaccine. Now, it vaccinates the kids against four different strains that are largely related to various forms of cancer or warts, HPV warts that exist. But let me tell you, and there's dozens and dozens of HPV strains, but there's a recent paper studying actually the transgender and gay community. Mm. And if any community could benefit from the HPV vaccine, right? Because we're talking about a lot of frequent anal intercourse. I'll just say it, anal intercourse. I don't want to make everybody blush, but you know, I'll say it, anal intercourse. It's frequent and with many partners. Yeah. And with many partners. So that's the stress test for the HPV vaccine. And this will be out of my Substack, Courageous Discourse. All the citations, by the way, you can find in Courageous Discourse. And you know what they found? They found that it was modestly had an impact. And these were men who were voluntarily doing anal swabs, and they were trying to, you know, participate there. The risk reduction was way under an accepted level of protection. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So even the HPV, when it's subject to a stress test, so blanketing the entire population who's largely who is not going to do these activities.
Right.
When it's really...
I'm certainly not.
Me neither. But, you know, it's the type of thing where we've put too much emphasis on these vaccines as if they're going to save us from something. And, you know, there's recently, it was a horrible vignette. It was actually in the U.S. CDC VAERS system, and it's a child under age 2. In a single administration, the child received the MMR, that's 3, DPT, diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis, influenza under 2, and the COVID, pneumococcal, and actually the COVID vaccine, all under age 2, and the child died within 2 days. Mm. Basically, death due to vaccination.
Right, right, which they tell us doesn't happen. Dr. McCullough, I so appreciate what you do. I feel like our conversation here has just reinforced my idea that the medical system is just for profit. It's all about the profit. It's all about the money. You're talking about these pharmaceutical companies who know if we can get these into every single baby, if we can get it on the childhood vaccine, that's easy money, right? It's gonna. That's just reoccurring cash that we're getting. Then we're talking about these poor transgender children who are being preyed upon by doctors who know that they will make lifelong patients. And I just have to tell you, I just so appreciate you because you are a rare breed these days in the medical community. Someone who says, I am looking for the truth and the truth is all that matters to me. I want the science behind it and everything else, whatever that may be, but I'm looking for the truth. And I just so appreciate your voice. And I so appreciate your friendship and I appreciate you being here today. Will you come back?
I'd be happy to.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for being here. We'll be right back. Chad.
Hi.
You are doing something special tonight.
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah, right after my show, which you all need to be tuned into, live on Blaze's YouTube and on Blaze's Facebook, we're going to be doing a pre-show presentation for the new Blaze TV movie, comedy movie called Reopening. And so we've got both the makers and some of the actors from the movie, as well as some other special guests making some huge announcements for Blaze. And so we're really dipping our feet in a big way into the comedy space. And I'm excited about what's coming here at Blaze TV.
Yeah, we've watched the movie over at my house. We loved it. It's very funny. It's, you know, it's sad what comedy has turned into with the left in charge. It's really, I know.
Yeah. And listen, you know, they probably don't want me talking about it, but I mean, they've had some pushback just by being on Blaze. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I encourage you to support this effort because these are independent filmmakers that put together a very brilliant, nuanced comedy film. And we're fortunate here at Blaze to be able to be the sole distributor of it.
Yeah, it's a platform. So make sure that you catch Chad and Friends later on this evening. Go check it out. Only on Blaze TV, you can find the movie. Anyway, Reopening. Thank you, Yaku, for being here. Thank you, Chad, for being here.
Thank you.
stream and subscribe to more Blaze Media content at theblaze.com/podcasts.